Hey, hey, Heat Nation! Welcome back to Heat is Gonna Heat. I'm your host, Kyle Russell, here to chat a little about our favorite NBA team, the Miami Heat. Took a slight break for the All-Star break. I mean, the players get to, I'll take at least a day yesterday to play some video games, and now I'm back today to talk about Heat going undefeated last week. They had two quick games against two big opponents, though, so definitely worthwhile. Then we got the addition of DeLon Wright over the All-Star break. We'll talk about what he could bring to the roster. Then we'll take a quick look through the Eastern standings, see where Miami stands relative to people, I mean, the other teams that they could try to pass or try to at least stay in front of as we go down the stretch run to the playoffs. And then, as usual, we'll finish up looking ahead to the one game we have on the schedule in the following week before the next episode. So, let's jump right into it. We go back. Last Tuesday, Miami is on the road, a road back-to-back to finish up before the All-Star break. First, this is at the Milwaukee Bucks, a game that they won 123-97, a blowout 26-point victory against a rival team in the Bucks. I'd love to see it. Injury report, we would have no Jimmy Butler. We already knew that beforehand due to the unfortunate death in the family, that he would be out that entire week. And additionally, we also knew that we would be without Josh Richardson, who got dislocated shoulder, and Terry Rozier, who I believe it was listed as a sprained knee. Like, the last pod I recorded right before we got the Terry Rozier news really did luck out there. Talk a little bit more about that later on, actually. So just to get into the game now. So to recap the game, and to start here, actually, would be who the Heat ended up playing, because those were three important members to the rotation. Jimmy, best player, Rozier, the newest acquisition. Josh had really been playing himself and earning his minutes. So with those three out, the Heat would go with a new starting lineup. I think it was like the 28th, 29th starting lineup they've done this season. Again, Spoelstra is just a madman that he has done this, and we're still, 30-25. But new starting lineup of Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson in the backcourt, Caleb Martin at the 3, Jovic at the 4, and Bam at the 5, obviously. With coming off the bench primarily, because we did get to some garbage time later on, but primarily just bringing three off the bench for these two games, Jaime Jaquez, Haywood Highsmith, Kevin Love, those all make sense to me as well. For the game itself, though, the Heat's offense came out scorching from the start. A momentary lapse in the Bucks while they were getting their offense going already saw Miami have a 10-point lead, and then they would just continue to score throughout the entire quarter, finishing up 12 points, 40 points in the first quarter. We've seen games where they scored 40 points. So doing it in the first quarter, great. 40-28, though, so up 12. And then in the second quarter, the lead hovered around 10 until the Heat scored the final 6 points of the quarter, where they would take a 16-point lead going into the half. Then the third quarter, to the credit of Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo, they did come out, had a really strong start to the third, and cut the lead down to 9, and you know, you started like sweating a little bit if you're a Heat fan. But the Heat responded with a crushing close for the remainder of the third quarter on a 19-6 run to be up 22. It was something like the Bucks scored 16 points in the first 5 minutes, and then 6 points over the remaining 7 minutes. Again, the defense really clamping down. And then the fourth quarter itself, it's pretty much just garbage. The Bucks waved the white flag when they were down 29 points with about 7.5 minutes left. So from there, that's the garbage time I mentioned earlier. So again, great game. Ultimately was a 26-point win for Miami and against a rival Bucks team, considering how these teams have been going at each other the last few years. Player of the game for this one, I am giving to Nikola Jovic. Both a team high for the game and then a career high for him. 24 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal on 8 of 13 from the field, 5 of 8 from 3-point range. Really had the jumper going. And at his size, it gives Miami something a little bit reminiscent of like what the Celtics have with Porzingis, and that's obviously a big strength of theirs. So Jovic knocking down threes, you know, tantalizing. Also went 3 of 4 from the free throw line. And yeah, just showing all the upside I keep seeing and hoping for, and that this could be a dude, again, so young, I think 20, 21 years old, something like that. You give him a few years, this could be the front court partner next to Bam. This was a great game towards that argument. Interesting stats for this game. It's kind of a take your pick. Miami won in so many areas. Won turnovers by 4, offensive rebounds by 2, field goal percentage up 7. Probably the biggest ones, free throw attempts plus 7, with Giannis in particular not having a single free throw attempt because of the excellent defense Bam was playing on him. I think it was like the first time since 2018 or 19 that Giannis has had that many minutes and not been to the free throw line. So, again, great defense. Probably the two stats that really stick out the most for me here, the 19-6 run in the third quarter, because that pretty much sealed the game right there when it could have swung the other way. And then Miami's three-point shooting, Miami going 19 of 40. That's like 47-48%. At that volume and at that accuracy, it's really hard for any team to keep up. And lastly, the honorable mentions, Duncan Robinson, 23 points and 6-8 shooting from three-point range. Did a good job surviving on defense next to Hero. I mean, at the end of the day, the Bucks only scored 97 points. That's still great defense. And then Kevin Love, 19 points on 5-7 three-point shooting as well. So those three with Jovic were like the big bombers. That's what? 5, 10, 16 of the 19 Miami threes made came from Duncan Robinson, Nikola Jovic, and Kevin Love. So moving on from there, we go to the other back-to-back game last week. Last Wednesday against the Philadelphia 76ers, a much more closely contested game. Miami still won, though, 109-104. In terms of injury report, same players out, same rotation for Miami. The only slight difference would be that the Heat would call Jamal Kane up from the G League and have him play significant minutes as the ninth man off the bench. Again, second night of a back-to-back makes sense to at least expand the roster to 9 and let Kane soak up some of those extra minutes. And paid off in the end. For the recap of the game itself, this is a game that had 15 ties and 21 lead changes. I think the largest margin, the largest lead either team had was 7, maybe 8. Definitely not, I don't recall seeing any double digits. So closely contested all the way throughout. And then, oh yeah, for the Sixers, they would also be without Embiid. I should probably mention that. But for the recap now, after an early exchange, the Sixers took a small lead on a 7-0 run that the Heat would retake the lead later on with a 9-0 run of their own, but both teams would end up tied at 33. So there were some runs, but it was more like one team being down a little bit to then get up a little bit, those kind of situations. In the second quarter, it went back and forth throughout the second with no runs, though Maxey would hit the buzzer beater with the game tied. Maxey would hit it to bring the Sixers up 2 going into the half. And then third quarter, Sixers kept the lead throughout the third until later on, where the Heat would, you know, just kind of close the gap and eventually take a 1-point lead going into the fourth. And then the fourth quarter itself, the Heat, after some exchanges early on in the fourth quarter, the Heat actually built up a lead, and they got it up as high as 8. And you're starting to think, okay, we probably have this in the bag now, but nope, they cough it up. That lead goes down to 3 and is 107-104 with waning seconds left. Miami goes to take a shot. It misses, but Bam Adebayo thankfully flies in, grabs the offensive rebound, then gets fouled and hits the 2 free throws to put the Heat up 109-104. Game over. And for player of the game, we're going right back to Bam Adebayo. 23 points, 13 rebound, double-double with 4 assists, 2 steals, on an efficient 8 of 14 from the field, 5 of 5 from the free throw line. That'd have been good. He's been a little iffy on the free throws lately. Only 2 turnovers and 2 fouls. Really set the tone early with 10 points in the first quarter, and then finished the fourth quarter strong. 6 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists in just the fourth quarter alone, alongside the winning offensive rebound and subsequent free throws. Stats for the game, a little bit similar to the Bucks, where the Heat either won or tied in most of the areas that you would look at for a game. They just didn't have as big margins that they did like in that Bucks game. So it was a 5-point versus 26-point. But the ones that stand out, Heat won offensive rebounding 10-6, and then second chance points 20-9. So they, you know, great job of just capitalizing on those second chance possessions. And then the free throw battle, Miami going 14-15 to the Sixers 12-16. And then, like I said, everything else is just kind of like won or tied. So those two things, you know, being better at the free throw line and then really capitalizing upon the second chance opportunities, that ended up giving Miami the edge in this game. And then honorable mention, Duncan Robinson, 20 points, 1 rebound, 4 assists on 7-11 from the field, 5-7 from 3-point range. Tyler Hero, 23 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists. A little less efficient, 10 of 23 from the field, mainly because did not shoot well from 3-point range. 1 of 8 from 3-point range, 2 of 3 from the free throw line. But both of them, productive and still surviving on defense. Again, it's not the best of competition for the Sixers anyway. The Bucks have been a legitimate offense all season long, so that might be the better one you want to point towards. But just the Hero Duncan backcourt does seem to be holding up better than we thought. So after that, the Heat go into the All-Star break, interestingly enough, with the same 30-25 record that they had a year ago going into the All-Star break, where on the one hand, they finished 7th in the East, slipped to 8th because of the play-in tournament. But then on that other hand, you know, they still did the magical run. But now it's going to be the question of, will they fall to the same fate and not make it out of the play-in by the end of the regular season? So, before we look ahead to things like the standings and the schedule next week, I first wanted to talk about the addition Miami made over the weekend from the buyout market, which ended up being a bit of a quick turnaround, all things considered. And sure enough, just to make me look foolish, I spent last week talking about like buyout candidates, primarily looking at size players. And then sure enough, the Heat go the opposite way and get a guard, because of course they already got the potential size change up on the roster in Nikola Jovic. Like, if they want to go bigger in the playoffs, I think that's what they're going to go to at this point. And I think that's why we're seeing, like, whenever Jovic does play, he tends to start. And I think that's just trying to get him, like, if he's going to get minutes, give him the highest challenging minutes by having him start. So if Jovic is going to be the size addition, potentially, you know, down the stretch run or into the playoffs, then that means that the Heat have to shore up the guard position, especially with the recent injuries to Rozier and Josh Richardson. So makes a lot of sense. You go out, you get DeLon Wright, who's just bought out from the Washington Wizards and was signed after clearing the waivers Sunday. So he's officially on the roster at this point. So what are the Heat getting in DeLon Wright? He's a 31-year-old veteran backup point guard. Like, this is a dude that knows his role and has played his role for several teams throughout the last few years, from the Washington Wizards to the Atlanta Hawks. I think before that was the Sacramento Kings. So this is not a guy, like, unlike a Kyle Lowry, he's not going to gripe to be a starter. He's going to just stick to his role. So that's more so off-the-court stuff. Like, you know, I don't imagine there's going to be any off-the-court issues with him. On the court, what the Heat are primarily getting is a point-of-attack defender to help bolster their guard room, not only now, but when Josh Richardson and Terry Rozier are back later on. Because if Josh Richardson's having a bad night and he doesn't really have it defensively, you can pull him, throw in DeLon Wright instead. So, and yes, these are kind of janky catch-all metrics, as happened with defense, but still, just for the sake of the argument, looking at defensive box plus-minus and defensive rating, he's been consistently one of the best defenders on his team for the last few years. So whether that's been at Atlanta or Washington, who have not historically been great defenses over the last few years, still, when you look at like the roster breakdowns over the last few years where DeLon Wright's been there, like, for example, with Atlanta, he was at the top in both defensive rating and defensive box plus minus, and while also playing the most significant minutes of anybody that was that high on their roster. So the word on him, he's a good defender. The film on him, he's a good defender. The stats on him, he's a good defender. We know that fits in exactly with what the Heat want to do. Outside of the defensive end, offensively, just seems like he could just be a solid contributor. He shot 35-39% from three over the last few years, though on really low volume. So, like, for example, his career high is 3.1 attempts per game. Not very high. So more of a spot shooter is what he's going to be in terms of space of the floor. Does have a good assist-to-turnover ratio, so can get out there, dish a little bit, and does a good job taking care of the ball. That also fits into what Miami wants to do, where they want to have, you know, tons of assists. What was it? They had that recent stretch. It was like they had 38, 39 assists in a game. And then also winning the turnover battle by just not turning the ball over. So overall, this is I think this is a great pickup for Miami. It remains to be seen if they struck gold again like they did last year with Kevin Love. But at least in terms of like fit and then what they could provide offensively and defensively, this is a really great pickup for the Heat. And with that, let's take a look at the East standings before we go into the stretch run and just see where Miami stacks up relative to everybody else in the East. So for some context first about Miami's stretch run, they have 27 games left, 14 of which are on the road, 13 at home, so slightly tilting towards the road, don't like that. They start with a 4-game road trip, and then they have one each of a 2-game, 4-game, 1-game, and then 3-game road trip. So nothing too major, no 5-gamers or anything like that. And for their home schedule, they get one 4-game home stand, 3 2-game home stands, and then they close with a 3 games at home. With the final two, I believe, both are against Toronto, so those could be some easy games to pick up if Toronto, say, like, they're just tanking because they're completely out of the play-in by that point. Something to look forward to. We'll get to that later on when we get there. So despite the schedule, which, you know, from a home road perspective, it's all right, I guess. But from a strength of schedule perspective, in terms of who they play, that definitely favors Miami. So, for example, a tankathon, who typically tracks, like, remaining strength of schedule for teams that are tanking, as the name would imply, has Miami with the 27th hardest, or conversely, 4th easiest remaining strength of schedule. And for this next part, I'll be primarily using tankathon just to try to get a sense of what these other teams around Miami have for, like, remaining strength of schedule. So, looking at the standings in the East currently, the Heat rank as the 7th team and would be in the play-in if that started today. So, they got to try to move up and get out of that. So, who can they move up? How high can they move up? Is a big question on my mind as we're going towards the stretch run. So, starting from the very top, Celtics are at first right now. Honestly, they're running away with this. I think they have like a 5 or 6 game lead on second place right now. With like a 13-game win lead over the Heat, we're not getting first. So let's just go ahead and do that. And respectfully to the second-place Cavs, who are +6 in the win column, and third-place Bucks, who are still +5 in the win column, even after last week's win, they still have healthy enough leads on the Heat that they would need to go on like a heavy streak for probably 2-3 weeks to even get in the range of catching them. So for now, I'm not going to count second and third, but I will essentially count anything fourth or below. So realistically, the Heat could still get home court advantage in the first round. It will be exceedingly difficult, though, but again, attainable at least. Currently in fourth are the Knicks, +3 wins over the Heat. They have the 14th hardest remaining strength of schedule, and their front court's currently a little banged up, like Julius Randle. Mitchell Robinson is still out until April. I believe Hartenstein had an injury. Anunoby is out, I think, a few more games. So there's the potential for them with the strength of schedule and coming out the gate a little slow because of the front court injuries that the Knicks could slip. The big problem, though, especially with Miami, is that the Knicks already own the tiebreaker versus the Heat. They played a best-of-3 series. They've played 2 of those games so far. The Knicks won both. So just off of head-to-head, the Knicks will win. There's still a scenario I will get to a little bit later on, but for the sake of this just direct comparison, the Heat would have to have a better record than the Knicks. It would be the easiest way that they would jump them. If it's a tie, then it becomes a little complicated. Essentially, they would have to have... I'm just going to get to it now. They would have to have the Orlando Magic also tie with the Knicks and the Heat, because then that would create a 3-way tiebreaker where Heat own tiebreaker on the Magics, Magic own tiebreaker on the Knicks, Knicks own tiebreaker on the Heat. And then because of that, it would go to division winner, which would almost certainly be Miami because the Knicks are in the same division as the Celtics. That's a very specific situation to get into. So the easiest way to remember it is just better record than the Knicks. After them, though, you have 5th place, the Philadelphia 76ers, +2 wins over the Heat still, but have the 9th hardest remaining schedule, and they'll be missing Embiid for the next few weeks. And like we saw, and like the record has shown throughout the season, they are not as good a team without an MVP-level player who could have figured that out. But the big advantage for the Heat over the Sixers in this race, yes, the Sixers have the lead, but the Heat are already up 2-0 in a best-of-4 series against the Sixers. So at worst, the head-to-head tiebreaker will tie, and then it would go to division winner, which Sixers are in the same division as the Celtics. So division winner would most likely be Miami. Therefore, Miami should feel comfortable in having the tiebreaker over the Sixers. They can clinch that with, you know, just winning one of the remaining two games they have against the Sixers, and Embiid will likely be out for one, if not both of those. So that's definitely an attainable thing. So overall, I would actually feel pretty confident about the Heat catching the Sixers. After them, next on the ranking at 6 is the Indiana Pacers, +1 in the win column over the Heat. We're like right there under them. They have the 19th hardest remaining strength of schedule, so a little bit of an easier time than, say, like the Knicks or the Sixers. And the Pacers are getting healthy, so I do think they could keep pace with the Heat down the stretch run. And I think what this may come down to between these two teams, they are currently tied 1-1 in a best-of-three series, with the that head-to-head tiebreaker being decided at the end of the season, April 7th. So mark that one on the calendar. That's going to be a big one when we get there. And depending upon where the positions of the teams are, that could literally be a game for seeding purposes. I've already mentioned Miami at 7th and gone through them. Right below them, tied at the same record as them, 8th, the Orlando Magic. They have the 30th hardest remaining, so the easiest remaining strength of schedule. Therefore, and they're healthy. Therefore, I feel like the Magic will keep pace with the Heat as well. But the Heat do own the tiebreaker against the Magic, having won the season series 3-1 versus them. So as long as they keep pace with the Magic, they will still stay ahead by the fact of having that tiebreaker. And then for the sake of the arguments, 9th place, the Bulls, -4 wins on the Heat. So like again, think of it this way, right? The Heat are closer to 4th place in home court in the first round, with the Knicks being +3, than they are to dropping to 9th. At -4. Like that's all bunched up, that middle section in the East has eventually gotten. But Bulls, -4, looming as they always have throughout this season and last season. 17th hardest remaining strength of schedule. Zach LaVine is out for the season, so they can lean completely into the Kobe White experience. And they are tied 2-2 with the Heat, so then it would go to division winner. So I don't think the Bulls can catch the Heat or the Magic or really anybody else. I think they're going to be capped out at 9th. But if any team starts messing around, the Bulls could take advantage. And that does include Miami. And then lastly, 10th place at the edge of the play-in, the Hawks, 6 wins behind Miami. It would take something really bad to drop that far. And then the Nets, 11th place out of the play-in tournament, -9 wins. I don't see the Heat dropping out of the play-in tournament. So zooming out now and looking at, you know, what Miami has to do over the next few weeks to secure at least a playoff spot, it's going to be keeping pace with Indiana and the Magic, so that way you don't drop below the Magic and you at least keep within shooting distance of the Pacers. Win that April 7th game that gives you the tiebreaker over the Pacers, and then just try to get ahead of the Sixers. So long as the Sixers drop into the play-in, very possible given the factors against them. And then so long as the Heat keep at least ahead of the Magic or at least win that April 7th game against the Pacers, it's very, very, very likely that they walk in with, at worst, the 6th seed and avoid the play-in and get that week off. So now let's look ahead to the next week of Miami Heat basketball. As usual, first the injury report. Jimmy Butler still does not have an official return. I would imagine, though, that he'll be back this Friday. Just hasn't been made official yet. Terry Rozier is listed week to week. Don't have any update for him. Josh Richardson will be reevaluated in at least another week or two. I think it was listed as February 29th would be the next evaluation date. And lastly, as usual, Drew Smith still recovering and will be out for the remainder of the season. Now let's look ahead to where the Heat will be going. They will be starting their post-All-Star break with a 4-game West road trip. Thank you very much for that. But at least it'll be out of the way, and that's the last major Western road trip. So, 1 game to cover this week, this Friday, at the New Orleans Pelicans. This is a Pelicans team that has a 33-22 overall record, and this will be the first of 2 meetings against the Western Pelicans team. Looking at the injury report for them, they have one player listed out, Daniels. I know I recognize the name. I can't even remember his first name at this point. But I do recognize the name, and I believe he's like an impactful rookie player. And then for nostalgia's sake, Cody Zeller, who, you know, we all remember Cody Zeller. I was ripping my hair out watching him play minutes in the finals last year, especially against Jokic. That just wasn't fair to Zeller, nor us. But Cody Zeller has been playing for the Pelicans. He's listed day-to-day. Hey, maybe we might see Zeller again. I don't know. There's some good vibes from that. Players to watch out for on the Pelicans. Number one's going to be Zion Williamson. Despite only being like 6'6", he's just an absolute explosive monster. So I'm really looking forward to seeing Zion versus Bam. And then also Brandon Ingram and CJ McCollum, just two really good scorers for the Pelicans. Not that Zion isn't a scorer either, but just say like those three, Ingram, McCollum, Williamson, those three are both the top three in points and assists for the New Orleans Pelicans. So it's going to be primarily running through those three on the offensive end. So stats for the Pelicans, 12th in offensive rating, 7th in defensive rating, 18th in pace. And things that they do well, 2nd in opponent 2-point attempts, which means that opponents get a lot of 3-point attempts up instead, but they're 1st in opponent 3-point percentage. So really great perimeter defense seems to be the thing with the Pelicans. 8th in their own 3-point percentage, so they do. That's where they get a good source of their offense. 7th in free throw attempts, and 7th in opponent free throw attempts. So they get to the line, and they keep the opponent from getting to the line. Things that the Pelicans do badly. Like I mentioned earlier, 29th in opponent 3-point attempts. So if the Heat can start getting some of those threes to drop, well, the Pelicans, as the defensive scheme, allows a lot of those threes to go. Also, despite being 2nd in opponent 2-point attempts, the Pelicans are 24th in opponent 2-point percentage. So, again, the idea being they limit a lot of those attempts in, but when they get through, they're pretty high quality. So, Heat, if you know, get Jimmy Butler to the rim, get Bam running to the rim, maybe try to get some easy points off of that. And then lastly, 24th in field goal attempts as a team. So the Pelicans are going, they're leaning more into the, you know, go slow, but get really great shots, which that favors more into the type of defense Miami likes to play. Like, by all means, take your time, and we'll just focus on making sure you get low quality shots, or at least as low quality as we can make. Storyline for this Pelicans game, well, mainly Heat focused, can the Heat get off to a great start post break? I mean, they did have a 2-game win streak going into the break. Can they repeat that and have that coming out of the break and just keep a good win streak going all throughout? And then the other question I have is, will DeLon Wright get minutes immediately, or is he going to be brought in more slowly? Given Rozier and Josh Richardson are definitely going to be out for this game, I would imagine that DeLon Wright does get some minutes, at least as like a backup guard. So it'd be interesting to see who he gets put on and how he does and how he fits into the Heat's system. Just because I think he could be somebody that gets minutes consistently throughout the rest of this season. After Friday, their road trip continues. They have Saturday, Sunday off, and they will be at the Sacramento Kings the following Monday. But I will actually do a good job and make sure that I get my podcast done to preview that game before it happens. So that'll be part of next week's episode. Additionally, in the next episode, I'm going to talk a little bit about what we can expect from individual Heat players as we go through the stretch run, because this is also usually when Eric Spoelstra really stops experimenting like he does in December, January, and just focuses on these are the things that we're going to do, these are the rotations we're getting to as we go into the playoffs. So how will the players fit into that, or what can we hope to get from them? For now, though, I do thank you for hanging around. That'll be all for this episode. Please, if you can, follow the pod at Heaters Heating and myself at KBR Heat Culture off of X/Twitter. Also, check out the other great pods we have at OTG Basketball, Celtics Lab, Brooklyn Buzz. I mean, especially with the Brooklyn Buzz, they just fired Jack Vaughn, so I would imagine they're just ecstatic overall there right now. Links for everything are in the show notes, as usual. I'll be back next week. So until then, hope you all have a great one, Heat Nation.